Harbor Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we begin, I'm going to recognize Jack.
Before we get started, I think the true sign of a dedicated public servant is when they come to a meeting on their birthday. And not just any birthday, but a very special birthday.
Oh, yeah.
So Joe Hall Brown, who can sing and I can't, is going to lead the room in singing Happy Birthday to Randy. Happy birthday, Randy.
Happy
take away Joel.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Randy. Happy birthday to you.
Yay!
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's a biggie. It's a sensational 6-0, so don't be guessing. I'm proud.
Makes me glad that I could only have a birthday on a fifth Tuesday.
All right. Thank you, Jackie.
Sorry.
I have one person signed up to speak on a matter that is not on our printed agenda. Jay Bryan, would you come up?
Good evening. We know you're here, Andy. Again, my name is Jay Bryan, and glad to be here. I'm, as you know, poet laureate for the town of Carrboro. Honored to be so. At your table, I've left a copy of the birthday anthology that a number of people worked together to make possible. And first, I wanted to thank the board for for a number of things. First, for your continued contribution to the Carrboro Day celebration, and of course, as part of that, the poetry reading that's been going on since 1996. Also for supporting Kim Andrews, who's a terrific person, as you know, who works on a variety of poetry projects, including the West End Poetry Festival and so on. You also contribute money or give money to the Arts Committee, and the Arts Committee's money is in part involved in this anthology and will be used to help buy copies that are then paid for by citizens. So I appreciate your support for that, also for creation of the Poet Laureate position. The acknowledgments, there are other acknowledgments that are on the page 161 of the anthology, but Ron Liberti created this cover. I think some of you have had experiences with Ron. He's a wonderful musician, artist, screen person. I want to mention, I don't think he's here, but David Yasinowski is a UNC freshman who did all the formatting and arranging of the poems. And really, without his help, this couldn't have been done. Others include Maggie Grace. And finally, there are 24 poets in this. They either read the poems that you're seeing at Carrboro Day, or they're poet laureates who've read them as part of their other duties. And they're intermingled in there alphabetically. So I'm grateful to have been able to put it together in time. The anthology. We're working with Kim and Chris. I want to mention also Chris Meacham, who is the head of the Arts Committee, is very helpful in guidance and support, as well as the Arts Committee as a whole. So we're working out a system where people can tell the Parks and Rec, you know, that they want to order some and how to do that. And once we get that together, then I think we'll make some sort of press announcement and then put on the website and so on. So I have appreciated the hard work of Steve Stewart, and sorry to read that he's decided to leave Carrboro, but he's certainly leaving it in wonderful shape. And since poetry doesn't cost very much, frankly, I this is in keeping with the fact that I'll bring this as a parting gift.
That's in lieu of a pension.
That's your gold book, not your gold watch.
Poetry in this book.
And then quickly, the second item. So have fun reading it and let us know how you feel about it.
Thank you for all your work on that, Jay.
Oh, sure. As I said,
a
lot of different people helped with it, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, thanks,
Jay.
Wonderful.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. The second thing is I just left an article at your table there about a website regarding historic preservation. As you may know, there's several areas in town that are part of the National Register, and there are tax credits that are available at the state and federal level for people who own properties with the National Register, and many owners may not know that. This site apparently allows people to determine whether they do have property in the National Register and also then how to take advantage of the various credits that are available. So I commend it to you, and I don't know how you want to have it be used, but perhaps the staff could look into how to alert people who own properties within the National Register districts. That includes Maple Avenue, Carr Street, Main Street, the downtown area, and so on. I'd also ask that you consider asking staff to look into the possibility of how the Oak Avenue, Shelton Street, North Greensboro area, Weaver Street, also be designated a National Register. Some of you have been around long enough to remember the difficult fights that were about us establishing a historic district in Carrboro, and we did generate a voluntary preservation district, neighborhood preservation district. This is very, very, very different from that. It's not a requirement. There's just, if you want to take advantage of it, then there are things that you can meet, but it's not something that's imposed on people. In fact, it's really an honor. And that neighborhood, I think, certainly could qualify, or at least could make an application. There's a wonderful person named Claudia Brown who lives in Raleigh, but she used to live on Poplar Avenue and was involved in the creation of the architectural and historical inventory. She wrote a lot of that. She works at the Archives and History in the Preservation Office, and I'm certain that she'd be glad to help the staff with the nuts and bolts of how to go about looking at applying for National Historic Register status. So I'll leave you with that. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks.
Thank you, Jay.
Do we need a motion to refer that to staff, or do we just agree to refer that to staff?
I'll take that as a motion.
Second.
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Chris, would you come join me up here?
I also wanted to say that I really appreciate all the folks on the Carrboro Town staff who helped put together Carrboro Day. There were lots of people from many different departments, police, fire, recreation and parks, of course, and I'm sure some others, but including, and this is apropos of my proclamation, the Public Works Department. Whereas public works services provided in our community are an integral part of our citizens' everyday lives, and whereas the support of an understanding and informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as public parks, streets and highways, fleet maintenance, public buildings, and solid waste collection, and whereas the health, safety, and comfort of this community greatly depends on these facilities and services, and whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities, as well as their planning, design, and construction, is vitally dependent upon the efforts and skill of public works officials, and whereas the efficiency of the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff public works departments is materially influenced by the people's attitude and understanding of the importance of the work they perform, now therefore be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, Mayor of the Town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the week of May 15th through 21st as National Public Works Week in the town of Carrboro, and I call upon all citizens and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize the contributions which Public Works officials make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. And I'd like to present this to Chris Sherman, who is, what is your title? Assistant Director of Public Works for the Town of Carrboro. All right. I believe that brings us to the consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Item 1 is approval of the minutes of the previous meetings. Item 2 is a request to set a public hearing to consider a land use ordinance text amendment and minor map amendment related to B1G CZ conditional zoning and placement on the property located at 500 North Greensboro Street. And I would call your attention to a handout at your place that slightly changes the introductory portion of the conditions. That's something that can will be covered as a part of the public hearing should the board so choose to set that tonight. And then item 3 is consideration of an appointment to the Board of Adjustment.
Move the items.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The matter passed unanimously. Item D1, fiscal year 2011-12 budget presentation. Mr. Manager.
This is my 34th budget presentation, including a couple of two-year budgets when I was in the lovely state of South Carolina. And barring something unforeseen, this will be my last budget presentation. So it's kind of an interesting evening for me as I thought about that today.
Be prepared for the questions.
Okay. I try to be. But I have a lot of good people here tonight. All of our department heads, except for George Sice, who has an excused absence tonight, and Chris is in George's place. And so I think we've got the firepower we need if you all have questions. And I really want to thank our department heads for the work that they've done to help put this budget together. But I especially want to thank Arch McAdoo and Sandy Svoboda because they have really put a tremendous amount of work into this budget, and they put up with me because I know they would tell you that it's not uncommon for me to say, well, can we look at a different assumption? Can we change this? Can we look at this a different way? Can we do that a little bit different way? Have you thought about this? And they've always been extremely gracious in accommodating those requests. I also want to call your attention to page 3 in the budget document for just a minute. This is not part of the prepared PowerPoint. But as you're turning there, you'll see that we've once again received the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award from the Government Finance Officers Association for the current year budget. And I want to call attention to that this year because you all know we had sort of an unusual situation last year without a finance director for part of that time. And Sandy Svoboda and Nancy Emsley in particular did a lot of things last year in helping to get the budget put together. And Sandy especially earlier this year in putting together the GFOA budget award application. And I don't think she'd ever done that on her own before. So I just really thank them for their efforts in doing that. And with that, let me say if there's things that you like in this budget, then the credit goes to the folks in the audience and the employees they represent. If there's something you don't like, then blame me for it. So with that, we'll get started. We started out looking at 4 basic goals that we wanted to try to accomplish with this budget. The first was to do what we could to avoid a property tax increase. Second was to try to maintain our current service delivery levels to the community. The third was to maintain our current active employees' jobs and fringe benefits package. And the fourth was to try to continue with our planned long-term capital initiatives. So some of the things just to point out is that it appears, although some days it doesn't seem this way, but on most days it appears that there are some key business trends that are improving. But I think it's fair to say that public sector revenues continue to sort of lag behind what at least a lot of the private sector, particularly larger companies, seem to be looking at. And the environment that we're looking at, the difficulties associated with it, really are compounded by the continued problems with state government and the large deficit that they're facing. So far, we've fared pretty well in budget deliberations, but there are miles to go before they've made their final decisions and put the state budget to bed. So this budget, really very much like the last couple of budgets, has been one that has required some difficult choices. That's not anything new in budgeting, but I'd have to say this, in some respects, was the most difficult budget that I've been involved in since I started a long time ago. I've never seen a three-run stretch with the economy the way it is, and I hope I can continue to say that we won't ever see one like that. Pretty sure we won in my career. But the total recommended budget is a little under $18.5 million. There's no property tax increase that's proposed in this budget. Let me just say a couple things. This is the third year in a row where we've not proposed a property tax rate increase to you all, and I haven't done any real research, but I'm not sure in the modern history of Carrboro there have been 3 years in a row when we haven't had a property tax rate increase. And some of you in this table, at the table, and some of you in the room will recall my first budget year when I told the finance director that I wanted to bring a budget to the board that didn't include a tax rate increase, and she laughed at me. Well, we did it. Unfortunately, there have been a couple of years when we weren't able to do that. But when I told Arch and Sandy, the department heads this year, that I wanted to do everything I could to meet all these other objectives that we talked about, but also go 3 years in a row without a property tax rate increase, I don't think anybody laughed. At least they didn't to my face. And we do plan to maintain our current service delivery levels. There aren't any program expansions. You don't see any decision packages as a part of this budget, no expansion items, because it is a very lean budget proposal. We do maintain all of our current active employees' jobs and benefits, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. I'm going to hit all these things that are bulleted below, so I'm not going to go into those now. And despite some things we've had to put off, we are going to be continuing with some of our capital improvement projects. Our own big dig here on Weaver Street continues, and if you've seen a hole down there, it's pretty deep. But it's moving along, I think, fairly well on schedule, and hopefully by the end of the year we'll be very, very close to completion. We also will be continuing with our sidewalk and greenway projects, primarily through the use of our bond proceeds, but also some federal STPDA money and some other federal funding that comes through the state that will help us leverage even more money. And just a reminder, and I'll remind our staff folks again, that $4.6 million or whatever portion of it the board wants to spend has got to be committed by November of 2013, because we've gotten that one extension, and that's it. And I know Public Works and Finance know that that deadline is looming out there about 2.5 years away. We are also proposing to maintain our fleet, at least our light fleet, primarily police vehicles, following our normal replacement schedule. There are some major items that I'll list for you in a minute that, in order to meet those other objectives, we just felt like we couldn't do this year. Spend a couple minutes talking about revenues overall. No surprise, I don't think. Our revenues are essentially flat, and they have been essentially flat for the last couple of years. We're projecting about a 2% increase in our property tax base due to limited growth in the community. We historically looked at 3, 4, 5% over the years, but the last 2 or 3 years we've seen very little growth in the tax base. Our other largest revenue source is sales tax revenues, and we're anticipating a 3% drop over what we had budgeted for the current year, which is disappointing, and hopefully things will turn around and we'll beat that. But as you all know, we always try to be very conservative in budgeting on the revenue side. We're seeing a little bit of a drop in recreation department revenues, a higher use in our scholarship program. As you all know, we don't deny anybody the opportunity to access our programs, but the folks who can afford to pay 100% are not participating at the same level that they have historically. Also, interest earnings are lower than what we'd projected for the current year, and our interest rates right now are at historically low rates. That used to be a fairly significant revenue item for us. It's not right now. And on intergovernmental revenue, the one thing that, you know, we think will probably continue to happen, you'll recall the state decided last year to withhold one quarter of our beer and wine license fees, and this budget is making the assumption that that would continue. This just gives you some percentages of increases and decreases. You can see the interest earnings, but don't be overly alarmed because that long drop is about $25,000. That's a lot of money, but it's not a huge amount when we're looking at an $18.5 million budget. The big one, not in percentage, but the biggest drop dollar-wise is the sales tax. That represents almost $100,000 in reduced revenue over what we had estimated we would collect in the current year. This just gives you a snapshot with the pie chart, and the primary reason for showing you this one is no surprise to anybody that between property taxes and our sales tax revenues, that's over three-fourths of our entire revenue stream for the town. And you'll see most of the other things are actually fairly small compared to those two, and the only one of the two big revenue sources we have any control over is the property tax rate. Sales tax is totally dependent on what the state allows and what people decide to purchase both locally and statewide. I wanted to show you this because I think, again, this reflects just how tight the budget is. You'll see that the proposed budget for next year is just under $36,000 less than the budget for the current year, or about 0.2% reduction. And when you think about the fact that we're dealing with increased health insurance costs, doing something for employees that I'll talk about in a minute, increased fuel cost, I think we're doing well overall to actually see a reduction. And in the face of that, I want to mention a couple of things, one of which is not a large dollar item, but I think it reflects some of the interest of the board. You all will recall discussing at our annual retreat, trying to do more with implementing some of the local living economy initiatives, and I took my cue from that, and there is an additional $5,000 in this budget to try to start to address some of those initiatives brought forth by the task force last year. Another thing that I wanted to mention that I think this board should be really proud of is in the wake of a lot of communities and a lot of agencies cutting back on human services nonprofit funding, this budget actually reflects about a 1% increase in human services nonprofit funding, and that funding level this year will be almost $146,000. So I just think that's pretty amazing for the town to be able to make that level of commitment in these very difficult economic times. To employees, and there is nothing in my mind more important in the budget than our employees, because without the employees, nothing gets done. And you know, service is what we do. And it's these folks in the room and folks that work with them who make things happen, who get the garbage picked up and respond to emergency calls, get payroll done, do the planning things, do all the backroom things that the public doesn't see, but nevertheless are extremely important to the well-being of this community. So the good thing is we're able to maintain our benefits at the current level. We are not proposing any layoffs, no furloughs, no salary reductions, and I'm really pleased that we can do that, again, in light of things a lot of governments are having to do around this state and around the country. I had really hoped, as I wrapped up the fourth of four employee budget meetings this afternoon. As I told all of my employees over the last couple of days, that this was the year that I really hope we can be able to go back and fully implement the pay-for-performance system, because it's been a couple of, had been a couple of years since we were really able to do that. I just couldn't figure out a way to do that and do it responsibly and not create an issue for somebody next year or the year after. So what we try to do is find some sort of middle ground between what we did this current year for employees and the true pay-for-performance system. And the proposal before you also takes the interest that the board expressed last year in trying to, in some fashion, address the housing wage issue. So what this budget is built on for employees is based on performance. Those employees who are below the housing wage for Orange County would receive a $1,250 lump sum payment in July, and that's if they score it outstanding in our performance system. If they score it proficient, they would receive $1,000. For employees who are above that housing wage for Orange County, those employees at outstanding would receive $1,000, and employees that scored it proficient would receive $750. I had an employee stop me in the parking lot today after lunch to ask me a question, which nobody had asked in any of our meetings, but I'll go ahead and give you the question and the answer, and that was, what if somebody didn't reach the level of proficient? What happens? I said, well, I didn't talk about that. It's a good question, but the way our system is set up, we almost never see that, and if we do, we set up a corrective pattern for them to follow to get that below proficient performance back up to proficient. If that were not to happen, then we don't really want employees working for the town of Carrboro who aren't at least proficient, and we just don't have that problem. So our health insurance plan will continue with no change in benefit. You'll see that we're looking at an 8.2% increase. When we first started talking with Blue Cross Blue Shield, we were looking at a 15.8% increase, but working with Hillchess and Woody, our insurance brokers, and with Desiree White and Tamara Hayes in our HR department, really pushing hard to get a reduction. We've got it down, cut it almost in half. But as I told our employees in our meetings the last couple of days, this is an area that we all really need to sort of join hands in and try to figure out ways that we can reduce these costs. And we're doing more and more every year on the preventative health side, and we need to continue to look at health care in a different way, because even an 8% increase compounded every year over 8 to 10 years is really not a very sustainable pattern to follow. So we just need to continue to keep our eye on that. You all will also recall last year we talked about the mandate to have the towns and cities and counties in the state up the contribution percentage to the local government employees' retirement system because of the pretty significant losses from a few years ago from the investment portfolio. Both the local and state retirement systems in North Carolina are much stronger than they are nationwide, but, you know, as somebody who's about to partake, you know, we want to make sure that they continue to stay strong and not to be self-serving. But it is truly very important, because most people who get into public service don't get in it for the money. But the fringe benefits, and particularly the retirement system, is a very important piece of the compensation for local employees, local and state employees. And so it's very important that that remain solvent. And I appreciate the fact that the retirement board members understand that and are doing what's necessary to maintain its solvency. We also continue the freeze on some specific positions, which are listed next. And we, I actually review every vacancy that comes up, and then we make a decision based on the need at the time. But these are four positions, permanent full-time positions that have been frozen for a couple of years now, and we would anticipate they would be frozen at least another year. They're still in the pay plan. There's just no money associated with them for next year, so I'm hopeful at some point that we'd be able to come back and fund those positions. It's not that they're not needed. It's just, as I've told you all before and I've told our employees, I would much rather ask you existing employees to pull a little harder to get the job done than I would to hire new people and look at somebody who's been here for years and say, whoops, I'm sorry, but we can't afford to pay you because we just hired four new people. That's not a conversation that I'm interested in having with our employees. I mentioned that we'd cut back but on capital purchases, but again, we are going to be replacing a number of primarily police vehicles, and so we'll be doing a limited financing for next year. We'll also have money set aside in a reserve for our street resurfacing program. We normally would put in another $200,000 this next year. We're proposing to put that in abeyance for a year, but we'll still have a healthy balance there to do our street resurfacing next time around. And then our debt service expenses have dropped a little bit next year for primarily two reasons. One, we've got a better interest rate on our bond anticipation notes, and the other thing is we're simply not financing as much from the capital improvements program as we would historically do. These are some things that you've seen before that have been on hold and in reserve. A couple of them, we just simply, even with what we have set aside, it's not enough money to do the funding. So we've got almost $55,000 in projects that continue to be frozen until hopefully the economy turns around. And then the unfunded CIP initiatives that, again, helped us to balance this year's budget. And you may say, well, three firefighters, that's not really a capital item. But if you recall, as a part of building the second fire station, we had originally planned to hire 15 new firefighters. We got to 12 and got stuck. We tried a couple of times to get grants to get these folks on board, and we still are pursuing that, but absent that, those will be on hold for another year. We've got several projects at Anderson Park that need to be done but aren't critical that to be done next year. The two big ticket items are the fire pumper, which is a replacement item, the front end loader, which is a replacement item, and the one new initiative that we were hoping to be able to do next year is to have a pilot project in the police department whereby we would put in five video cameras and five police vehicles and the associated software. Many, many police departments have those, and they're a very valuable tool for the police department. But again, this is one of those years where we felt like we just couldn't start a new initiative like that. So that saved us about $1.2 million in gross funds. It wouldn't have been that much in debt service because these things would have been done through installment purchasing, so that payment on those wouldn't have been that much, but in total terms, about $1.2 million. Sort of wrap things up, you know, we continue to be concerned about the lack of growth in revenues. I'm hopeful that next year will turn around. I hope that last year, and I hope that the year before, if we hope long enough, it will turn around. I'm confident of that. And continuing to maintain our current service levels really requires us to pay really close attention to those revenues. And at some point in the future, the revenues are going to have to increase, or we are going to have to look at finding a way to stimulate the increase through a tax rate increase. But I hope that won't have to happen anytime soon. And as we've already talked, there is a delay on some capital items, and it could result in some increased cost in the future, but as I told the employees yesterday and today, and I've been talking with Arch, I'm working on a plan that I'll be leaving with you all and with my successor that I believe we should be able to address most, if not all, of these items that are delayed this year, that I'll be sharing at least a way to get there next year, so that my intent is not to leave anybody with a big hole to dig out of next year. That wouldn't be fair. So there might be other ways to get there, but I will share a way to get there.
Especially without a new front end loader.
Pardon?
I said especially without a new front end loader.
Yeah, well, we got to pick up the garbage, and we want to answer fire calls too. There are these large ticket items, but again, we're going to be working on those. Some things that we know are coming next year, we believe there will be another step in that contribution to the retirement system. Again, I hope that we can restore the pay-for-performance program next year. We will be seeing some increased debt service cost as our bond program continues for sidewalks and greenways. And as we go back to increasing the number of vehicles that we purchase for replacement next year, I'd like to think we wouldn't, but my guess is in the short run we're going to continue to see some sort of increase on the health insurance side unless a decision is made to change benefit levels or unless we have an incredibly healthy year, and I'm going to hope for the latter. And just finally, I think we know the ultimate outcome of any good budget planning is to make careful and balanced choices to try to make sure that we provide the kind of services that our residents have come to expect, but also maintains both our short-term and long-term fiscal health. And I really believe that the town of Carrboro has been a wise steward of the public funds over the years, and I think have made sometimes difficult but very good decisions that over the years that have helped us maintain that fiscal health and a very good service delivery. And so while I wish this budget included some things that it doesn't include, I'll have to tell you that overall, actually, I'm pretty proud of the budget that we put together. I think it does the things we have to do. It does a few things that we'd like to do but didn't have to do. It takes care of our employees, not to the level I wish we could, but it does something for them, and everybody, barring something unforeseen, is guaranteed as long as they do their jobs. They've got a job with the town. We're able to protect our benefits package, and the bottom line is we're able to deliver services to the community that our folks who live here have come to expect a high level of services, and I think most days we deliver that. So I thank you all for listening. I thank you all for your support on past budgets, and I hope that you'll see that overall this is a very good budget given the financial circumstances around us right now. And again, I want to thank all of our employees for all their dedication and their work in making this budget look as good as it does. So I'm glad to answer any questions, and I'll just mention that we propose a work session on May 10th, which is next week's board meeting, and same cast of characters will be back next week as well, but we're happy to try to respond to questions you all might have tonight.
Can Mike come next week? Okay.
If we need the work session.
Yeah.
We need a work session.
All right, all in favor of the budget.
I have questions tonight.
Go ahead.
I have two questions and two comments. Is the an estimate for the town manager search included in this budget?
It is not, and depending on what you all do, we talked about that. If you sign the contract before the end of the fiscal year, we'd need to come back and amend this year's budget because you can't have the funds. I mean, you have to have the funds in order to sign a contract, or Arch can't sign the pre-audit certificate. If it's next year, my assumption is there's likely to be enough lapped salary to cover it, and if not, you could come back and do a budget amendment at that time.
Okay, so if it's before, if it's before June 30th, it would be an amendment to this year's budget.
To this year's budget, yeah.
And are there funds in this year's budget that would cover that?
Well, depending on, one way or another, we would find the money might have to come out of unappropriated fund balance, but unless you are spending a lot more than I think you would spend, then we would be able to identify the funding for that.
Okay. My other question, this is a little bit speculative, and kind of looking ahead to next year, because my sense is that this year we saw very little in addition to the tax base, but that in the coming year, and we're seeing the Ballantyne is being built now, I think the last Claremont is going up, some of Lloyd Square, maybe the hotel. So I'm thinking we can anticipate some additional revenue next year from at least, you know, those projects. You know, not a lot, but, you know, maybe, you know, in the ballpark. ballpark, 50 to 100,000.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to say a number, but I would think you're right that there'd be some. I think the next year probably would be a better year. But I'm thinking we should start to see this.
Uh-huh.
I'm hopeful.
Okay. Okay. A couple other things on the level of comments. I'm not going to be the one to say how appreciative we are of you and all the staff for this budget. I'll let someone else do that. But I do want to make a comment for the board that to be aware of that part of what this budget is predicated on is no increase in the transit system cost. And last month, there was nearly $1.5 million deficit in the transit system budget. That's probably going to be largely covered by the transit system capital reserve, which we had thought we were accumulating for bus purchases. So it's one of those kind of when do you pay the piper kind of things, because our fleet continues to age faster than we can replace vehicles. So I just want to make sure everyone's aware of the situation in the transit system. And the other comment I want to make is not really pertain to this specific coming budget, but it's something that I looked up when I heard an ignorant comment on the WCHL forum last week. It wasn't you, Mark. You were brilliant. Joel, you were brilliant. But someone else said something about the Chapel Hill and Carver tax rates and how high they were. And so I went to the League of Municipalities and dug up their document on municipal tax rates through the state to determine that out of 330 municipalities, our tax rate is about 78th. And, you know, is that too high? Is that too low? It's certainly not among the highest. And it's hard to judge any particular municipality because circumstances differ so much from place to place. Chapel Hill, by the way, is like 120-something in that ranking. Durham is somewhere between Carborough and Chapel Hill, despite all that commercial property that attracts our sales tax dollars, right? But they're still paying a higher property tax than Chapel Hill is. But anyway, I just thought those numbers would be helpful for people who are watching or listening and paying, you know, thinking about what our overall tax rate is.
Could I make a follow-up on the transit piece? Because as hopefully sooner than later, the board's going to be seeing a draft of the Orange County Transit Plan, and one of the things that's been talked about and bandied about is whether or not there ought to be anything in there for existing services. Dan and Lydia, no particular, struggling with that very large gap. If there's not some new money coming from somewhere, like the sales tax, and by the way, there is some debate over whether or not that can be used for in some fashion dealing with existing service. That's not a shut case, I don't believe, despite what some may say. But in any event, certainly the car fee can be used for existing service. And if we don't get some piece of some of that revenue to handle dealing with existing service, that leaves it on the property taxes for the Carborough and Chapel Hill and for the university to figure out how to get more money out of the students from parking fees and other fees. And because there's really nowhere else to go for that. If we want to maintain a really strong transit system, in my mind, we need to take care of the core services before we get so excited about adding all this new service that we can't pay for. So that's my editorial comment for the night on that.
Thanks, Steve.
Obviously, like it's incredible the effort that staff has done and you have done in maintaining a budget and. Given the current economic situation and how much we hear so much other places that are really struggling. So firstly, I'd just like to thank everyone for having accomplished this kind of budget. I think that in hearing what the state is talking about, that perhaps next year is not going to get any better, that it is a challenge for us to continue to find places where we may be able to save money. And synergetically, along with the presentation we recently heard from the Capstone course and the opportunities in reducing our CO2 emissions, I'd be interested for us to explore, and I'm sure there are other places, but at least in energy savings, and seeing if there's a way in which, because my understanding is we have access to a program to share interdepartmental utility usage, or specifically electricity usage, and perhaps make there be an opportunity to compare between departments on upgrades and efficiency, and make that a challenge, you know. And so I would be interested in exploring that option more. Of course, there are more details to understand. So for that reason, if we could get a better sense of what that program is that was mentioned, that is available.
Who mentioned it?
It was mentioned
the Capstone report.
The Capstone presentation, that there's this program that each department can input the electricity usage, and you can compare, growth or reductions in electricity demand. So if the board is amenable to something like that.
We had asked staff to look into the recommendations made by the Capstone.
I guess it would be part of that process. So when
there
the time
was,
comes.
I think, there were a page of recommendations that I think our direction from the board was to take a look at each of those.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Steve, I'll just echo the good comments from everyone. I really appreciate the budget you and staff have brought forward here. I just have one question based on tonight's presentation from you. I don't know that we are maybe slightly nervous of what the state is going to be doing this year. I know the county is probably extremely nervous of what the state budget is going to end up being like. But I know you made the comment that, of course, this year we still had the mandated contribution increase to the local retirement system, and you mentioned next year the increase to the state retirement system. Was that kind of timed out for a few years, or are we getting near the end of? Because I remember when you talked to us about it.
It's several years. So we're in the second year this year.
So last year was the first, yeah.
Because there was conversation at one point by the retirement board of doing it all in one fell swoop, and it was a lot of pushback. And,
right.
You know, we can't really do that. And the good news is the investment portfolio was actually done better than was anticipated 2 years ago. And so I think both years the increase has actually been less than what was anticipated. So, I mean, it's still an increase, but I would rather they have anticipated more to be less than the reverse.
Right, right. Okay, so that's something we'll look for the next 3 years, it seems like. Okay, that's the only question I had right now.
I like that that Steve says, if you like it, thank staff. So, you know, Arch and Sandy and Nancy and all staff, thank you so very much, because 3 years in a row to be able to hold our own is amazing in this economic climate. It's just amazing, and it's a testament to the public service that you provide, and really understanding the values of Carrboro. That 1% increase in human services is just an outstanding commitment. I did want to ask Anita, if the Rexon Park, was it a matter of the Century Center being booked? Where do you see that change in the cost?
It's a combination of program fees and Century Center reservations. The facility is being used, but it's being used a little differently, maybe for different activities other than paid reservations.
And in terms of numbers of folks involved in programs, is that up, down? I mean, where is that?
Well, if we don't have an activity, then that lesson will be taken. And so certainly I think our participation numbers are holding pretty well. It's just some of the classes have not been, the attendance was low, and it was not enough to move forward with the classes.
Okay.
So they're canceled if we don't have a certain amount in each class.
Mm-hmm. And I have one other question. You know, over the years, we've kind of looked at several events that come into Carrboro, and we've looked at, you know, charging them for the cost of the services that are provided. In the more global picture, are they worthwhile in terms of a money generated multiplier effect, or is there any way to quantify?
Are you talking about our
road races and in particular?
To be honest, I really don't have a whole lot of assistance with, I don't participate with or work with the road races, so I'm really not certain about those type of special events.
I think most of the ones that we have now, at least the direct costs, are covered. And you all, I think, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I think you adopted a policy last year for these nonprofits that they had to put something from the proceeds back into the community in order to have those kind of events here.
So we're still seeing it as worthwhile or, you know, zero sum?
You know, I mean, the biggest concern from the staff standpoint is I don't think we feel like we can accommodate a whole lot more of those events, because at some point it becomes not a matter of dollars and cents. It becomes a matter of how many times can you ask the same people to work overtime, because at some point overtime pay or comp, or, you know, comp time off doesn't replace the need to be able to recharge and do something other than be at work all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you all.
Maybe we can do as a follow-up in the future, if you would do a survey of the same number of businesses shortly thereafter the event, and whether or not they are experiencing an increase
or a decrease
in revenue. They don't have to tell you what they, you know, they can put it in categories 5, you know, 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, something like that, up or down. And maybe that's what sort of a survey that just pick and determine if there's an improvement or not.
We may be able to see that if the hotel opens and we get hotel.
Right. But you could ask now. Yeah. With the remaining road, I mean, the one you couldn't do probably Turkey Day because
everything's
closed. But the other ones you might want to consider doing it, you know, just pick those businesses that are adjacent and say, are you experiencing an increase or decrease in revenue? It's just an idea. But I had an independent question.
Yes, go ahead to your question.
Now, my great budget. My only independent question is about the number 4 Anderson Park, I guess, whatever you do with the field. And I was going to ask, what would that entail and why the cost of $43,000? I guess that's my question.
It would entail taking a look at redoing that field so it could be used for many different uses,
okay,
such as soccer, such as football, basketball, and also some lights on that,
okay,
particular area. Are you familiar with the area we're talking about in between the basketball goals and the very end? We practice a lot there. It's an open field.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with it.
So
okay.
We really wanted to try to use that and be able to provide more structured activities on that.
Okay. Okay. That's it.
Okay. Steve and town staff, great job on bringing this budget forward. Thank you. I believe that next step is for us to pass a resolution setting a work session and public hearing dates.
I move we set the public hearing for May 24th and that we not set a work session.
Second.
A counsel, before you vote, can I just mention that there is another item scheduled for May 10th. You don't have to have the budget work session, but I did want to mention that. It's not going to get you out of a meeting unless you want to delay it, because we've got...
Well, I was thinking about all the staff that needs to be here.
Okay.
For this,
Steve Spade with Chapel Hill Transit is going to come next Tuesday night to talk about bus advertising.
Okay.
So it'd be great if that's all we need to do that night.
Okay.
And our thing with Kathy.
Right.
Right. Okay. It's moved that we set the public hearing for, what was it,
May 24th?
Mm-hmm. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
And Steve, stop feeling guilty about retiring.
It's fine. Yeah, it's good. We're happy for you.
We should correct Jay Bryan on one point. Steve's not leaving Carrboro.
He's not leaving Carrboro.
That's right.
We don't let him leave Carrboro.
No, I'm going to be right where I have been for the last 7.5 years.
All right.
In your office?
It's just that... Yeah,
he's good except for that.
That's your problem.
Okay. Would anybody object if we moved now, instead of to number 3, we skipped ahead to number 4, Home Consortium Program Agreement Renewal? I know there's a couple different staff members who are here to speak on that particular item. Would that be
acceptable?
I mean, fascinated, though, I'm sure Tara is, in the early voting options for Carrboro.
Let me just say, I do have an idea.
Watch it on TV.
I mean, why did we have...
Annette Stone, our Economic and Community Development Director, has a brief presentation, and Tara Fikes is also here from Orange County if you all have any questions for Tara.
Well, this is my very first opportunity to be in front of you all as a board, and I'm going to take a quick second just to thank Town Manager Steve Stewart for bringing me here, and you all. It's been a great month, and I've had fun and enjoyed meeting a lot of people and looking forward to doing a lot of great work with you all. So,
welcome.
Thank you very much. Tonight you have in front of you several resolutions and an agreement dealing with the Home Consortium. The Home Program is a program that was established in 1982 as a partnership among Orange County and the municipalities within Orange County to provide affordable housing for low-income families, homes, people in the community. And so it's been a successful program and gone on for quite a while. Tonight, included in your packet is information about the updated consortium agreement that establishes the partnership, a resolution authorizing the town manager to execute the agreement. There's also a resolution authorizing the county to submit the updated consolidated housing plan for us and the annual program design that lays out the various spending for the year. This board asked for some changes to the agreement, which are included in the agreement that is in your packet and is in italics, so you can see where the changes were made. So with that, and again, I do thank Tara for coming out and being here sort of back up for us tonight. You have the resolutions in front of you. You have the agreement in front of you. And I will answer questions and or defer to Tara if you have any.
Yeah, I want to thank Tara for her quick response in incorporating our concerns into the new agreement. I think that will help us a lot in the mm-hmm. future. And I see Joel has her. I was going to move item A, but I think Joel wants to say something.
Yeah, before we move item A, just on section C on page 5, I hope consistent with that added language that whoever the representative is from the local government that we will have some internal assurances that someone will go, because if somebody's not at a particular meeting here, we continue the meetings. So I just want it to be clear there needs to be some internal thing from the board, whatever it may be, loose or unloose, or even something that's set in stone, so that the representative or the representative's designee will be at the meeting. That's it.
That's a good suggestion. Go ahead and make your motion, Dan.
I'm going to move attachment A, authorizing the execution of the agreement.
Second.
All right. And does that include the recommendation, dollar figure recommendations? Or
no, that'll be
okay.
Right.
Let's go ahead and vote on that. All those in favor, it's moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 There's one opposed.
One opposed, sorry.
One opposed for the same reasons with regard to why I was opposed to adding that language in the first place. Not against the home program, but what I've indicated earlier about that.
So the matter passes 6-1.
Move item C, resolution authorizing submission of the action plan.
Second.
It's moved and seconded that we authorize the submission of the plan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed. Matter passes unanimously.
Move item D, resolution authorizing the program design.
Second.
All right. Is that the dollars?
Yeah, that was the dollar.
Yeah. All right, so that's been moved and seconded. I just have a question, not so much about I don't have a problem with this set of dollar figure recommendations, but I see that there are a number of items in this recommended list of funds that address homelessness issues. There's $50,000 for homeless outreach through the Housing for New Hope program, which sounds great, and also some, I guess, $125,000 in construction money for the Interfaith Council Social Services men's transitional housing facility. I know in, and I guess, so I guess here's my, which, well done, that sounds good. My question is this, I think last year, or perhaps it was the year before, one of the projects that was funded was for the creation of some apartments, I think on Pritchard Avenue Extension and Longview Drive in Chapel Hill, that are basically long-term supportive housing, basically for the type of housing that addresses the problem of chronically homeless people in our community, of which I think we've done in recent years a kind of census or count of folks who are chronically homeless according to HUD's definition. And my recollection is that it's something like, the count usually comes something like 40 or so individuals. I thought it was really great that we added, I think it was 10 or even 12 units, 10, five duplexes, 10 units on over on Pritchard Avenue that addressed that problem. I just want to kind of express the hope that we might find a way to continue that pattern, because I feel like, well, if 10 units address about a quarter of the problem,
right,
and that over the course of a couple of future budget cycles, if we were to make that kind of commitment into the future, it doesn't mean that there wouldn't be any chronically homeless people anymore, but it means that we would be making an investment that's in keeping with the scale of the problem of chronic homelessness. And I guess what I'm wondering, were there any applications that sort of didn't make the cut this time, or was it more a matter of that you didn't hear those applications?
We did those applications. These are all the applications that we received.
Right.
So all of them got some portion of the pie.
Right.
But I will say, though, that the money that's here for homeless outreach does provide funding for rent subsidies.
Oh, okay.
Which is really important to persons who are, homeless or at risk of being homeless and meeting their month-to-month rent obligations.
Okay, well, so that's a good point. Right. I guess I wonder whether, for example, when the county issued its affordable housing bonds probably eight years ago, whenever that was, obviously the county commissioners had a lot more, there was a lot more local control because it was county dollars, but there was more of an effort at that time to kind of put out something, I don't know, a request for proposals or a set of criteria by which the county would make decisions about which projects to fund. And I'm not necessarily saying we need that for something like that for the home program, but I wonder if, even on an informal basis, whether there's a way to kind of put the indication out there to the housing organizations that are working in our community that there's some interest in funding a project of that kind so as to, you know, hear about proposals of that kind if there are some. I don't want somebody to just throw something together, but now would sort of be the time for people to begin to be aware of that for the next funding cycle so that they could work on developing a strong plan for that. I just, we don't have to vote on that or anything, but I just want to put that idea out there to staff and to our representatives on the committee.
Tara, who was the agency on the Pritchard Avenue duplexes?
That was CASA.
Okay. CASA was the organization.
Right.
All right.
I have a question.
Yes.
Tara, who's TBLF? What group is that?
That is the Graves Law Firm, the law firm in Durham that does affordable housing. They just recently completed a 77-unit complex in Hillsboro, known as Eno Haven, for persons who are elderly and disabled.
They have an expertise in doing tax credit for this type of housing and for obtaining this type of housing. They did some work with self-help.
Okay, thank you.
All right, great. That it may seem strange that that's an LLC, but that has to do with the way that tax credit developments are organized financially and legally. Anyway. The control will be in the hands of the nonprofit organization, ultimately.
Right.
All right. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
All right. Now let's go back to continued discussion of early voting options at Town Hall.
Okay. This is for you all to continue your discussion on one-stop, no-excuse early voting options for the November 11th election. And Kathy's done research, so she's really a person. If you have questions, I would suggest posing them to her, but laid out several options for ways in which to have early voting in this facility if the board so chooses, which perhaps would involve relocation or cancellation of some of the board's meetings in the fall.
Kathy, I know I saw that for Chapel Hill Town Council, it said our reservation may be unavailable if Chapel Hill requires the use of chambers.
Yeah.
Did they give any kind of outer date at which they might be able to release it?
Last minute is...
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Can I make a crazy suggestion?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is. Well, I don't think it's crazy, but it's a little different. Since it is 6 months out, would the board consider meeting on a non-Tuesday to facilitate voting? That is, just move it perhaps to Wednesday. Not, of course, not that's Bible study night for some people, historically. But instead of saying, okay, we'll meet on Tuesday, none of the advisory boards meet on Wednesdays that I'm aware of in here.
Where would you meet?
But the problem is still
they want the room full time.
Oh.
So it's not a matter of the night, it's a matter of the time.
It's the room being set up for
a
room.
We need a creative idea for a room.
Like
that's correct.
The other thing is 6 months out, it's just two meetings we're talking about. Couldn't we plan around so that we cancel those meetings?
Or maybe we'll already be canceling probably the night of the election.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's three.
Right.
It would seem to me we'd have at least just one of these. We could have one of these meetings.
Well, we could meet someplace and only have audio. I mean, quite frequently we only have audio anyway. Or we have nothing.
We can cancel the November 1st meeting and have a week of early voting. You know, it was kind of like the middle ground.
No. You know why, no? Because there are some people over on the other side of the triangle doing everything they can to prevent people from voting. You know, they're looking at all kinds of new schemes to kind of suppress voting. And so I think the least we can do is have early voting for as long as we can have early voting.
Hmm.
So I want the full window.
And as much as I hate saying this, maybe we need to, one way we could do it, if the plate becomes heavy, we say we'll come back 1 week earlier in August.
Or something. Yeah.
Or something.
No, that's crazy.
I'm sorry about that.
That is crazy.
I know. We need some place where we just have audio.
You know, I'm just saying. It's a thought.
Back in the day when I started, we just had scribes sitting in the back.
Yeah, really.
Sound, so.
The OASA option with one camera is $675 for the two meetings.
I was also wondering if there are other places that we haven't considered as a possible place for us to meet. I mean, how large a facility do we need to have? Is it possible for us to meet at a school like Carborough High School?
Well, what would be the advantage of that?
I mean, then we would not
As opposed to like OASA, for example.
I think they still would charge some.
The issue is going to be if you want to televise, you've got those costs.
But if it was just audio, I mean, I'm just trying to look for a place
it's
where they might charge
and go up to the central hall.
Yeah.
It's
just audio. I mean, that's...
Yeah, why can't we just do audio? I mean, we're not that cute. People aren't going to really...
Well, we would maintain the record of the complete...
Exception of... Right.
Well, goes without saying. Yeah. But we could... I mean, they would maintain the audio part.
Yeah, we can get Carolyn's sketch artists from the police department.
It would be like court.
But, I mean, Century Center were available. I'd like that.
Dan. So, I'm going to make a motion based on Lydia's comment that we plan to meet those 2 weeks in the OASA community room with one camera, and that as we get closer to that time, if we're able to cancel one of those meetings, we can do so. But that we go into the fall with 2 weeks of early voting and meeting at OASA. It's in Carborough, and we're accustomed to meeting there, and it's affordable.
We could even, if we decide, we could even have it just be speaking, not just
audio.
Tell me the
shortcoming.
Mixing
the idea of the Century Center and audio.
We'd be paying $675 in order to have video. Is that your point?
Exactly.
Yes. If in the Century Center, it's free, and we just have audio.
Is the Century Center available?
Ours.
I don't know that.
Yeah, we would have to look into that.
It's not free in the sense that it.
Well,
it potentially displaces some revenue, but
is there a rental fee for OASA beyond the video? So
no.
OASA would be free without video.
It's free and it's free and no cost, and it's free as an available. Right. The Century Center, we don't know.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
And it's more accessible if you want to come, because it may be more difficult to find a parking space.
That was a friendly amendment that we not include the video.
And I'll second that.
Okay.
And that's out of OASA.
So OASA
audio
only.
So we'll be able to have the full window of early voting.
And we'll have two meetings in October.
But we're going to have all available early voting.
Right.
Okay.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, manifest unanimously.
For me.
That's a miracle.
Yeah.
All right.
Happy you.
Discussion of town manager recruitment process.
Desiree's on her way up. She really doesn't have a presentation. I just wanted to mention before you all start your discussion that we prepared an abstract that includes four potential firms that have North Carolina experience and beyond, and three of the four firms listed on here are firms that you all considered for the last search. That is the Mercer Group, Springstead, and Slavin Management Consultant. Of course, you've used Mercer the last time. The fourth one that was added is Developmental Associates, Steve Strauss, and that was added because several town employees, including myself, have had experience with Steve Strauss and know that he, in addition to these other firms, has done a lot of work around North Carolina and does a good job. So there are four very strong firms for the board to consider, and there may be others that you all have in mind. And also just call your attention to page 2 of the abstract, which lays out a very brief outline of the potential
scope of services that might be considered. And I think, except for the last item, I don't believe Mercer was involved in assistance with the compensation and benefits negotiations. In fact, I'm sure that wasn't the case because I was on the other end of that, and I did not deal with Mercer on that. But I think all the other things were the kinds of things that perhaps Mercer had done before, and I think any of these four firms are capable of doing any of those items. So I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions, but when responding to an email from Dan, I remembered the majority of the process that we used. And one of those things was the board had a specific conversation about what the RFP would look like, so that the RFP went to the firms and the firms responded back to us and we reviewed their RFPs, and then we questioned all the firms based upon what they sent us in response to our RFPs.
Yeah.
And then we selected the firm and we had a list of, I remember this part, we had a list of questions, and all of the candidates that were sifted through, I think the top 15, they were asked the same question, and it was recorded because I had a set of tapes, which
right.
I just threw away.
We did phone interviews with them and then sent them to four or five of
right,
us.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
And we had a meeting, and the small committee talked about the top, what, five or six?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had dinner with the top five or six in small groups, and then the board met once again, because we did in a two-day period, the board met once again and then made the final decision.
But it began with our choosing the firm.
Right.
The board chose the search firm.
Right.
I just had a question. Steve, maybe you all can't provide this right now. Do you know how much was spent using the search firm?
Yes. I have it here. I have it somewhere. It was $24,000 and change. I don't recall the exact.
And did
number.
That include flying people in and dinner?
I think that included everything that Mercer did, and
okay.
I don't know what all they did in terms of the candidates, but their bill was something over $24,000.
Yeah.
There was a base for services, and then there were reimbursable
right.
expenses.
Dan, yeah, I'm wondering if it would make sense for us to delegate a subcommittee to draft an RFP to bring back on the 17th for the rest of us to pick apart and perfect.
Well, yeah,
that sounds like fun.
Here's the thing, but I think
we got to do the work.
Right, but I think the board needs to have a discussion about what the characteristics of the. I think the board was. This part I do remember. We were very specific about what we wanted in the next town manager. Now, that much I remember. And there was...
Was that something that was done before selecting a firm, though?
No, we selected the firm first.
Okay.
But we also made sure that the firm kind of...
Understood who we were.
Got Carborough.
Sort of like what we did with the town clerk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of the information that we provided. I mean, there was some. I thought there was some information. That
I was looking at this. I don't know if everyone had a chance to look at this. Chapel Hill process
right.
that they used. But, they had a number of facilitated sessions to figure out, what the board wanted, what key management thought was important, and, some people who were selected from the community that were done by the search firm or the search people in their case. So, I think that's part of what to me, that's the kind of thing that goes into framing the RFP.
Well,
I don't know that we're in a position to do all that work ourselves.
Well, when you start talking about key members of the community, who are you going to leave out?
That's right.
I mean, at some point, I'm just, I'm putting it out there so we can discuss it. Who are we going to leave out if we pick selected members of the community, as opposed to...
Are you going to leave out 19,000 people out of 19,020 or something?
Okay, let's start with getting a search firm.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have that much time.
Well, I think as a starting point, there's an existing RFP of some sort we could use to work off of a small group or us for the next meeting or the next meeting, whenever we discuss
right.
it. And really, in response to what Dan was saying, I mean, maybe we don't pick the people out, but maybe we have a time period where if community leaders or folks wanted to come and give us their input,
right.
kind of like the superintendent, people could email the
right.
board members and let them know kind of what they're looking for. So we don't maybe have to seek them, but if someone
right.
wanted to say something to us, that's just a thought.
Well, uh-huh. You know, at the university, when they're hiring upper-level people, they'll have several meetings where, or maybe it's just one per candidate or something, where the person comes in and gives a presentation to anybody who cares to show up to that presentation, and then people can write comments and evaluations. That's just one of the pieces that they go through during the day, but I think the university community has found that to be.
Could we ask Anita how they chose people for the focus group in Chapel Hill? Could you
this isn't a focus group. This is it's a meeting. Anybody wants to come can come.
Yeah, and I.
Right. Joel's saying how do you select people to come? Well, they selected some people in Chapel Hill. Maybe it was effective. Maybe it was helpful. Maybe it wasn't.
Well, let me ask these questions. Well, ask her, because then I can ask the questions I want to ask.
Okay. Anita, could you come up and speak to us, please?
And I wonder, are any of the documents that were used to find Steve available?
It should be.
They're probably pretty good documents, considering what they found. You know? And we could tweak them.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure,
the RFP,
sure.
From search.
So my question was about, yeah, you all, part of what you did was, it says one focus group with key stakeholders, and Joel raised the question, well, you know, who do you leave out from that? In other words, isn't the entire town key stakeholders
sure.
by implication? So,
excuse well, the way, by the way, hi, I'm Anita Badrock. It's nice to see you all this evening. Thank you, Mayor and Alderman, for letting me talk for a few minutes. When we handled the town manager search, in my former career, that's what I did. I was a recruiter and worked with the town of Chapel Hill along with another consultant to hire the town manager. And what the council at that point decided in response to your specific question is that there were people that they wanted to be sure were invited to this focus group, heads of committees, town committees, other folks who had engagement with the town, but the facilitated group was open to the public as well. It was published as an open meeting, and there were some other people who came. They just really wanted to be sure that there was a special reach out to those people who were engaged in town business and working on various committees to do town functions. So we had, I think there were about 35 or 40 people who showed up to that particular meeting, and we had a facilitated session that we went through where we asked pretty specific questions. And the town of Chapel Hill decided to do that way at that point. The manager, Cal Horton, had been there for a long time, and they had been very happy with his work, but they felt as though it was a good point in time to begin to think about the future and how they wanted to move forward with the future and to really be sure they had a good snapshot of what they needed to move forward. So they chose to do a lot of this community engagement with the council. We interviewed each council member separately and with key town staff before they developed their candidate profile so that they would be sure that they understood what it was they were looking for.
And so it was the search firm, or you, and you were serving in that role, mm-hmm. I guess. It was you as the
yes.
search firm that did that.
Like yes. That. And so what it was, the person who worked with me was an organization development consultant. I understood the search process and did and handled the search process, and he was an organization development specialist. And, you know, I think my experience with other search firms is that they can pretty much do whatever you want them to. I mean, I think you just have to be really clear in asking for what you want. And I'm familiar with three of the four firms that are on your list, and I know they're all really good and really reputable. The thing that helps them help you is if you're really clear about what it is that you need at the time that you begin to go out and solicit those requests for proposals.
Anita, on this list, is there you know, a consultant firm that comes to mind that's not on the list that you might think should be on the list?
No. In fact, I did a little research after Alderman Coleman and I spoke, and the, you know, Developmental Associates is a firm with a really good local reputation and has done work in similar sized communities to Carborough. The Mercer Group is a really also, and one with that some of you all are familiar with your search for Mr. Stewart, and the Slavin Group as well. They are all people, you know, I suspect that at this point, yeah. What's really good for you is to have a search firm that has a really strong relationship with a lot of different kinds of candidates throughout the country. You know, this is going to be, this is really, I'm so sorry to see Mr. Stewart leave, but this is a really wonderful opportunity for somebody. I mean, this is a wonderful community. It's a location that is nationally recognized. In fact, there are a couple of candidates that we recruited for Chapel Hill that wound up not being selected that have taken other jobs around the Triangle because they really wanted to be here. And so I suspect you're going to have a really wonderful candidate pool. And the key for you is going to be finding the person that understands what it is you want Carborough to be. And they understand, they have the skills necessary, but they really understand what makes Carborough unique and what you want.
Anita, so if we decide we are going to include notions like creative, non-traditional candidates, mm-hmm. or a broader process, like mm-hmm. the one I think we did before, and also like what you mm-hmm. did in Chapel Hill,
right.
Do you think these firms will understand that and be able to do it, or are we going to need to kind of ride herd on them?
Before you answer that question, that's presupposing what if the majority of the board wants.
That's what if means.
But what if means. Have to define what creative and non-traditional is?
No, not to ask a question. The question is, if we did this, could they do that? It's my question. You can ask your question.
I will ask my question, but I'll ask my question. But I think I'll be real clear about what my thinking is.
Yeah, please be a lot clearer than I am. Okay. Anita, if you're able to answer my question.
Yeah,
please.
You know, a good search firm will take a lot of time to listen to you. And that should be a key component of whatever of what you look for. The three firms that I know do national work, and they do it in lots of different communities, and they do it for lots of different kinds of boards and councils. And so I do think that they can get that. I mean, you're pretty clear. I mean, I think this group of aldermen have been pretty clear about what it is they've wanted Carborough to be. So I would think they would be able to do that. And, you know, at least in the case of the search firm that helped you before, some of the same players may still be there. And they spent a lot of time with this community 8 years ago. Was it 8 years ago when they hired you? Yeah.
I have a question. Joel, did you have a question?
Mm. Oh. We're just ready to comment.
Okay. Hi, Anita, you mentioned something that I think is interesting when you said you worked with an organization development specialist.
Yes.
Is that something, and that was pre-choosing the consultant, right? That was before the consultant was chosen?
No. The organization development consultant and the search firm, my search firm, were chosen before we got into the process that we built to develop the candidate profile and identify the kind of candidates that they wanted to recruit.
So, because I think the organization development specialist does bring a very interesting perspective. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we would look for? As you said, you know, these consultants, they'll do whatever we ask. Is that mm-hmm. something we should look to ask for? Would you?
Well, I know at least in two of those firms that they either have people on staff or they have partnerships with people like that, that they bring those people in depending upon the level of support and assistance that you want in that regard. Usually that's an additional fee above the search fee that they charge for their services. But I think, you know, in the conversations I had with the Chapel Hill Town Council afterwards, they found that very helpful. In fact, they found it so helpful that they retained that person through the first year of the new manager's work to help transition him into that role. Because, you know, Mr. Horton had been there a really long time, and there's a lot of changes that happened with a new town manager, even though the senior management were very happy for him to come.
Steve, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Anita may not be familiar with Springstead, but the board should be, because they've worked for the town for many years on some other projects, and I do know for a fact, and I'm not pushing any firm, but I just say, you know, you all get a full picture of what's out there. They have organizational development people on staff, and so, and they do national searches, so I think anybody, any of these four firms, they might have a different approach, but I think both Mercer, Springstead, and probably to maybe a little lesser extent, Developmental Associates, all are familiar with Carrboro. Probably Springstead is more familiar with the organization itself, because they've spent many hours with the employees.
Yeah, which report did they?
They did the last position classification pay plan and also the fire study.
Right, that's what it was. Thank you.
Lydia.
Anita, I'm going to use your expertise for just a minute.
Sure.
If we spent 24 to get Steve 8 years ago, do you have a sense of ballpark sense of what we'd be looking at budgeting cost-wise for a search firm? I mean, we're about the same size.
You know, I think that the movement in executive search, especially for public sector employees, has really been, you know, it used to be that it was a percentage of annual salary and that kind of thing, and that's really not the right way, you know, to price one's services. You know, there's a certain amount of work and professional expertise, and so I think you'll find a lot of transparency in how they're going to respond to your request for a proposal and for a price. So I know that in the cases of ones that I saw lately, it really depends on the level of work that you want accomplished. And that's what you really want, is you really want to pay someone for their professional expertise, because, you know, the salary is going to be what the salary is going to be, and you really want someone, you know, providing you with the service level that you want. So, you know, I think that I really don't know. I presume, you know, Mr. Stewart might know better than I, based on the kind of consulting services they've paid for over the last few years from the consultant.
Yeah, I really don't know, and it really very much depends on the scope of services, because if you're talking about doing the kind of scope that Chapel Hill used when Roger was brought on, that's a much larger scope of service, I believe, and so that it'd probably be a good bit more than the $24,000. The firms that I know here, I don't think they pay any attention to what you're paying the candidates. They're going to look at the number of hours that they think it will take to do a professional job for you, and the fee in some respects is going to be dictated by what you all want. Last time, I just happened to look back, I think the three folks three firms that provided quotes, I believe were all within a few thousand dollars of each other. There wasn't some huge disparity in the fee.
I think last time we put out an RFP, and then we invited people to come make presentations to the board, and the board chose from those. And I'm presuming that we still have those RFPs. And
I'm sorry, but I didn't participate, so I don't have any of that information.
Would the clerk have it?
The clerk had it?
I think
the clerk wasn't. I mean, we got to have that somewhere.
It should be somewhere. I think we found the agreement, but I don't think you've come across the RFP yet.
That's interesting.
Not to my knowledge, but I can certainly go
back
and look.
We could work back from the agreement to the RFP if we needed to.
Yeah, I mean, it would just be nice if we could get a packet of all the paperwork and the
baseline.
Well, if we could get a packet that had the RFP and kind of the process that we went through, so we can look at that, and if we want to change some of it, we can. But there's no sense in reinventing the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And two, the the, I'm sorry.
I mean, just a copy of the process we went through last time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Desiree
says she wasn't involved, so she doesn't know.
Right, right. But that's what I'm saying is but it doesn't sound like we have what you're asking for.
We must have the RFP and, like, the schedule. And it was only 8 years ago. We don't have to do an archaeological dig.
Right.
We might.
Trash cans.
That's right.
Well, I can look in the one room that
I'm in. The minutes?
It's got to be somewhere.
But we may have to contact Sarah and see.
Yeah, that's also last week.
Maybe it's in that book, Dave.
There is a possibility. I'm sorry. There is a possibility that the search firm might have a copy of it as well.
That's true, too.
It is, you know, that's the other thing is that is your, you know, that is your work product because you paid for it, so.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yes.
Here was my comment. Not necessarily criticizing Chapel Hill's process, mm-hmm. per se, but we're sort of at a different place than Chapel Hill. They had a long-standing he had been with the organization for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long he'd been town manager. At least he'd been town manager as long as I had been.
20 years or something.
20 years.
Yeah.
At least.
And so they were critically thinking that they needed a shift, if you will, in some of the relationship things and how the board interacted.
Yeah.
I, for one, don't feel like that we're at that same place. I think that was where we were when we decided to hire Steve. Forget your name.
The old guy.
The old guy.
No, he was retiring.
I'm just saying I'm not necessarily... I'm always consistently suspicious of us going out and picking someone to come and participate in it because we may miss someone or we may should have included someone.
Yeah, although, you know, my recollection is that y'all did do something like that.
Did we?
I was on some kind of focus group, whatever, but I was part of some kind of meeting with the Mercer Group?
Mercer.
I met with them prior to them having identified any candidates.
Right.
And there were, I don't know, you know, 20 people in this room or 15 people in this room.
Yeah, we invited anybody who wanted to come.
I wasn't on the Board of Aldermen or anything at the time. I was, nonprofit organization. Person.
Okay. If somewhere we have to have the list. I think it went pretty well. I mean, we had a small group of aldermen that worked on it.
Just to kind of clarify where we are in this process, though, so what you're saying is that you feel like we really need to sort of dig up that material in order to be able to issue an RFP?
Well, I mean, it would be easier if we got it. It's easier than writing a new one. I don't think it's going to be that.
It'd
be a good basis.
Right.
If not, then we'll have to write a new one.
Right.
But then issue an RFP.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't want to have this conversation like every week. I want to get to the
point. Well, I mean, how about this? Since I'm always a very big process person, if they can't find it within a week, having dug through all of the archival places that one could find it in this old building.
And asking Mercer.
And Sarah. Why don't we just ask Mercer and Sarah if they know where it is. If not, then we'll put together it. If staff could give us something
to work on,
and then two or three of us will sit down and tweak it, and then interview firms.
Well, in the worst case, we can work from the contract.
Let us look, and I think worst case, we can call Mercer and talk to Jim or talk to somebody with that firm, and they should probably have in their files. We should have.
Can we come back to this on the 17th?
On the 17th.
Are we meeting? Are we not meeting this week?
Are we not meeting on the 10th?
I thought we're meeting on the
10th. Can we do it in 1 week? That seems ambitious.
Well, you were giving them a week to search.
So. A week to look.
All right, then 17th it is.
Okay, because we need to get hopping.
Yep.
Okay, so what do we want to be able to accomplish on the 17th? We want the staff to tell us.
My thing is we should have a couple of us get that material and put together a draft that, as I said, the rest of us can pick apart and perfect.
Okay.
Shall we? I think, regardless of what they find the old RFP, that would be a good idea.
Yes.
To just update it, if nothing else. Right. Are there like two aldermen who'd be willing to participate in that process?
I would like Joel and Jackie to lead.
That'd be great. As far as
just because some of this will jar their memory.
But the rest is you can't pull apart and pick at it too much, right. or you'll tick me off.
We'll focus on perfecting rather than.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, and if we develop a subcommittee, that would be fine. But I think in the first, you know.
Well, we might need another committee to work.
Exactly.
The search firm.
Exactly.
So.
But
that'll be a different assignment.
Right. So in 2 weeks we'll come back with something.
And you guys will have as a draft.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometime in
Dan, are you sure you don't want to do it because you seem to have real ideas about it? Yeah.
I'm fine. If the two of you are, you know, wanting to take it on, you know, it gives me more time to play catch.
Okay,
that would be great if you could do that before the meeting.
Okay, but we need something to work from. So if, as soon as we could, somebody could email us, like what you want to work from, and then. There's wine in the town budget, and we'll just sit on my back porch and work this
through. Even if there isn't wine, I've got some at home.
You got some
at home? Both homemade and purchased with it.
Come on, my house. We don't have kids at my house.
No. You can make 50 gallons for your own use.
If y'all come back to
the line, North Carolina.
If y'all come back blind in 2 weeks, we'll know what happened.
You won't be blind. It's not that kind of wine. It's really good.
Okay. I want to. Do we need a formal motion for that?
That Joel and Jackie develop a draft for us to review on the 17th.
All right.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All those in favor, signify by saying
aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, not passed unanimously. All right. I think that's all we need to do on this topic for now. Are there any other matters to cover?
I have two matters related to Owasa and Jordan Lake, that if folks would prefer to put them on the agenda for the 17th and not talk about them tonight, I'm fine that we could talk about them. I don't know if everyone read that email.
I didn't read it.
I read it, I'm sorry. Right back.
What time did you send it?
It was probably like 10:37 on Saturday.
I read that one.
We're meeting next week.
All right. The suggestion is to put those matters on the agenda for the 17th.
We're meeting next week, right?
We could do it next week. So let's do it next week.
Yeah.
All right. The motion is for the 10th. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Yes, ma'am.
I have one thing. Can anything be done for Beehive, because of the construction, but if there's anything staff can figure out to assist them, because one, we loan them money and we want them to have business so they can pay us back, and two, they're a thriving, nice business.
Yeah.
And so, and the reason I bring it up is because, you know, when Robbie did that whole new thing and opened up Fayetteville Street, well, it killed a business. And so I don't want to be in the same position of us. And we have to do it. Don't get me wrong. We really need to do Weaver Street. So if there's a way that we can be more helpful or figure something out that staff could talk to, Public Works.
Well, talk to them. Chris is here and Matt's here, and I know they're both taking this in, and we'll see if there's something else we can do. When you first said Beehive, I really thought you were talking about a Beehive.
No, not the Beehive.
It's kind of town where that's plausible.
Right. No, I'm not talking about like bees, because we need to support bees because of the disease and stuff, but that's a whole other issue.
They're an endangered species.
Right. So, but seriously though, something could be done. I don't know what. And it could be very creative. You know, something as simple as on the weekends or Friday moving those things, you know, so they could, you know, when they're finished with the work, move it someplace where people could see them and come a lot easier, for example. Just something really small.
If staff would explore
a banner saying
there's a shop here.
Right, but I think she's right, because sometimes they leave, like, the big equipment parked right in front of the beehive, and they don't have to leave it parked there. They can park it somewhere else.
You know, they can move it up a little, you know, move it up a little bit.
Well, maybe they can. Well, that's what they're
saying. I mean, they could, you know, they inquire if that's a possibility. I mean, not next to the big hole, because we don't want it to fall in.
Yeah, but they could move it further
plane.
Down, like, towards the Century Center, you know?
I don't know. It depends on where they've been putting the holes. So I don't know. So I won't say, you know, where I would like it. I'd just like them to think about moving it on the, you know, something. That's just an idea.
Steve, do you want us to accept the report from staff on the search firms? We have that resolution.
You can.
I mean,
I'll move accept it.
Second. It has been A from our last agenda.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, it's been moved and seconded for the resolution. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously. Could
I didn't know if we wanted to say something.
I don't. Maybe next.
You don't have.
We can say next. I wanted to. I'm sorry. I know. We're nearly at the end, but I want to give the board a very brief update on the Orange County Transit planning process. Just to kind of make sure that folks understand what planning process is happening and at what point y'all are going to have a larger input into it. The proposal for the half-cent sales tax for public transportation that would be used to finance the development of a light rail system in the Triangle area. As a part of that, in order to implement that half-cent sales tax, there would have to be a financial plan that's adopted by our Board of County Commissioners for how the money would be used. And very substantial chunk of the money would be used, of course, for creating a light rail system in between UNC Hospital and some various places in Durham. But there would also be a significant portion of the money that would be allocated for expanding bus service, regional and local bus service within Orange County. And Lydia and I have been meeting with Lydia as MPO chair and me as mayor have been meeting with folks from Chapel Hill and Hillsborough and Orange County about how we might trying to draft what that plan might look like. And Steve alluded to this a little bit earlier. And we're hoping to bring you a plan sometime in early May. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, it is early May, in early June, in about a month, that would show how Orange County would get somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 new hours annually of bus service. And we've been working together to try and develop a picture of what that bus service would look like, which routes would be expanded or which services would be initiated. And right now, what it looks like is that we would be shooting for some expansion of Saturday service in Chapel Hill Transit service area, possibly some Sunday, a certain amount of limited Sunday service, some later evening service in Chapel Hill Transit service area, and then also the creation or expansion of some of the express regional services from Carborough to Durham, and as well probably some expansion of the 420 route between Hillsborough and Chapel Hill, initiation of a route that would run along the US 70 corridor from Mebane to Durham, Eflin to Durham, mm-hmm. Eflin to Hillsborough to Durham is what I'm trying to say. And also, it is thought, at least at this point, probably some internal circulation within Hillsborough, some service that would help move folks around within Hillsborough, as well as perhaps a few additional services in rural areas of the county.
and a few other service, some very significant, actually, service improvements in the 15501 corridor and the 54 corridor by bus in the short term.
When you say short term, do you mean that these are changes that could happen within this next year, or?
Well, in order for the sales tax to be implemented, there has to be a referendum. That referendum would happen either in November of 2011 or November of 2012. It's not entirely clear whether it can make the ballot in time for November of 2011 at this point or not. Okay. It may. And I think partly that's something that will be partly in our hands, in that while formally speaking the plan has to ultimately be approved by the county commissioners, not necessarily by us, I think the county commissioners are looking to build some consensus among Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Hillsborough, and the county about that. And we've tried to structure it in a way that so that we'll be bringing you a proposal that takes into consideration where the greatest ridership needs and demands are, but that also tries to choose, make sure that all of the, you know, if all we did was look at ridership numbers, then all we would get is service on 15501. and that doesn't seem like that's really appropriate. So we've tried to build some geographic diversity in the service, right, and be responsive to what riders, current riders of Chapel Hill Transit say they want in terms of later night mm-hmm. service and more weekend service, and also addressing where the ridership numbers, the current ridership numbers suggest that more service is needed.
Being a bus rider, the thing that would be great, I'm really pleased about the different sort of geographic diversity that's being discussed. And if there's any feedback that you would want to give from me, you know, take it for what it's worth. I think it's actually a very good idea for the Eflin, Hillsborough, and Durham route, because people are actually, who live in those areas, a lot of people work in Durham. And so instead of having them in a car, they could be on the bus. And it makes a lot of sense, because there are large employers there, Duke and other, you know, employers, that people could take advantage of that, both in Southern Orange County and Northern Orange County and in the middle. So I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. I've heard from some folks who are nurses at UNC, and they're very concerned that their schedule, which is it's an odd schedule always, is not easily met by the bus services, and that they're kind of overlooked. So, for example, if they finish at 7:30, 7 or 8 o'clock at night, they can't get bus going home, so they're forced almost to use cars.
Right.
And you know, emergency room nurses and whatever, that, you know, they're not leaving, they're not clocking in and out. And so I'm concerned that maybe UNC Hospital needs to, you know, help advocate for, you know, the bus service for their folks who are service people who live in our community.
Well, I think the university actually, you know, they run a lot of the routes themselves, and those routes are actually structured to coordinate with the shift changes at the hospital. And so really the thing to do is the people you're talking to need to talk to Carolyn Eflin's office that's trying to deal with that within the university, because that's not going to be addressed by the Orange County plan. And it's probably not going to be addressed by Chapel Hill Transit, other than either through the university's part of the system or through their initiation.
Yeah, I think
so I think that would be the best.
That's interesting, because there's about a half hour or so window from which the time, you know, these nurses finish to the time that the last bus goes, and they can't possibly always make that. They'd be high and dry without it.
Lydia and I will take a look at that, a little closer look at that issue, I think, and taking into consideration your point as well, Dan. I think the night and weekend service expansion component of this will go a long way. It won't be perfect. Those working third shift are not going to be on buses.
To your point, Carolyn often brings up whenever we talk about any tweaks in the schedules, she'll immediately go right to the shift workers and so on. Mm-hmm. You talking about 7:38 must mean that they're not like Eubanks Road folks. They must be at one of the other lots where service stops a little sooner or something. So we need to have, you know, really, I think Dan's
Jones right. Ferry Road is a good example of.
Okay. So Mark, my question has to do with the night and weekend service. So if this passes, like in the current financial climate, we're cutting back on weekday service. Mm-hmm. The sales tax would actually fund expanding night and weekend service, potentially even while we're cutting back on the core service. Is that right? Or
well, I think that's basically that is true. Okay. I think the intention at this point is to get to the point where, and this, none of this is guaranteed, and it's not clear whether the expansion is going to look more like 30,000 hours or more like 40,000 hours quite yet. Mm-hmm. And the difference between 30,000 and 40,000 is big. For example, the night service is 5,000 hours, so that alone is a very big chunk. But the intention at this point is to make our Sunday service be somewhat similar to what we have on Saturday, a very limited schedule, but out there, and to transform our Saturday service from the limited schedule it is now to running basically all of the routes on Saturday. That's the preliminary indication anyway.
And some rationale behind that, correct me if I'm wrong, was that with the grant applications for the federal monies to try to go toward the light rail, there's a need to show buy-in from the community of having feeder routes operating around the time the light rail will be operating.
Right, that makes sense.
So the need to beef up maybe an extra day because the light rail may be running on that day. And mm-hmm.
Right.
Bring those
exactly.
feeders
right.
in.
Like, it doesn't make that much sense to say to the feds, we want you to help us pay for a seven-day-a-week train, but we're only going to have five-day-a-week bus.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
Mark, just sort of related, we were given a presentation about it was done so that we knew exactly where the light rail would end at the hospital, of where it would make sense for it to end so that it could continue at some point to Carrboro. And I just wanted to make sure that we're kept abreast and that the Chapel Hill Town Council is sensitive to that study as they're looking into possibly allowing development at University Square, because it's a significant place for this to be viable.
Right.
So if we could
get a
report from the staff.
I think that's already established in Chapel Hill, that transit hub idea is part of the redevelopment of that part of town.
I don't know. I mean, I believe you. It sounds plausible. I don't know. I know that is certainly the sort of at a level of detail that Lydia and I are not on this working group are not really working at quite yet. But
yeah, I know the white paper of the possible routes to Carrboro. I mean, I don't know that they were thinking about the University Square redevelopment. So I think that's worth mentioning. I'm sure Patrick's aware of it. Something that's certainly worth mentioning.
Yeah, I'd like to hear if we could get a response about the status of University Square and just make sure that if they're that Chapel Hill is sensitive to that.
Very sensitive.
Better stop. It's a live microphone. All right.
Okay.
Well, I mentioned that mostly not to get into too much detail about it right now, but just I just want you to be aware that process is going on, and don't want you to feel sort of blindsided about when it does appear. We'll try to bring y'all's input into it as we continue to meet over the course of the next month.
I think that's great, though. I mean,
Steve, I just had an email from Steve Spade saying he has a conflict next Tuesday. He needs to be at a budget work session for Chapel Hill that he thought started at 5 that actually starts at 7. So we're going to have to reschedule him coming to talk about bus advertising. So I know you all had
Is there a motion to cancel the?
Well, you had something with Kathy, I think, and then you talked
right,
about the Jordan
that.
Lake and Owasso, but I didn't know if that changed your thinking about that.
I had originally thought the 17th would be a Owasso thing. If we're not too busy, that's fine.
Is Kathy okay with you?
Okay with that?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, then. So we won't meet on the 10th.
Okay. That was a motion and second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously. If we stay another 15 minutes, we could probably cancel another meeting.
But since we're not meeting next week, that means Steve's going to work another weekend for our next
week. Yeah, you can.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying
aye.
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 Okay. Okay. I'm going to go.